This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hello there. Thank you, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome today's guests. A quick visit to their website tells me all I need to know about them as a couple. They are, in fact, a love story set to music, and we will get into the backstory of that statement, I assure you. Two musicians, each traveling their own path until they were brought together by fate. This dynamic duo have been solo musicians in their own right, but together they have become a force, blending raw emotion, powerful storytelling, and electrifying musicianship that delivers an unforgettable experience on stage as well as in the studio. That too is on their website, and honestly, I used all of it because I couldn't say it any better. Now, I met this couple earlier this summer in Flint, Michigan, and I became an instant fan. They are as genuine as people come, and I have been looking forward to this interview since that day a few months back. 40 Below recording artists Anika Chambers and Paul DeLaurier, or as we know them together, Chambers DeLaurier, welcome to Time Signatures. How have you guys been?
Hey, Jim.
Good. Busy.
Busy and good.
Yeah, really.
So I know. I've been following you guys, man. You were in Europe. You were all over the place.
Jet setters, as they say.
Jet lag. Yeah. So the last time we talked, it was just before your birthday, Anika. And I want to get this story nailed down right at the outset for the two of you. I would love for each of you to share with me your parts of the story of that chance meeting at the Orpheum Theater in Memphis in 2018.
Well, who wants to start?
I'll let you go this time.
Well, we were obviously, the world of Facebook sort of tells you how many friends you have in common with this such and such a person. Mm-hmm. And she kept popping up and, you know, so you have 200 and something friends in common or whatever. So, you know, I looked at her profile and stuff. And so I knew who she was already. I knew that she was in the business like I was. And I think it's the same for her. And so, we're 2018 mm-hmm. at the IBC, the International Blues Challenge, mm-hmm. is happening in Memphis in January. Mm-hmm. And we're in the lobby of the Orpheum Theater, and it's crowded. It's everybody's networking and schmoozing together and stuff and talking and handing out business cards and whatnot. And I look across the room, and as they say in the old stories, our eyes met across a crowded room, you know. And I just, I kind of recognized who that was, right? And she looked over and waved at me like she knew who I was, like we already knew each other, you know. So I said, well, that's weird, you know. and so we somehow got closer and we said hello. It's very, very brief.
He was like, hi, I'm Paul. And I was like, hi, I'm Anika. And then
that was it.
Yeah.
It was really strange because we were both kind of not shy people
at all.
And we were whisked away by somebody somewhere else into another conversation or something like that. And then we did see each other for another few months until we were at the same festival playing in Bradenton. Bonita Springs, uh-huh. Florida. Yeah.
Okay.
We got to jam together there. Mm-hmm. And after that,
we ended up on the other coast, which is the coast we live now.
I was on tour with my band throughout Florida. It was March 2018.
Okay.
To try and get here, you know, twice a year just to break the winter up, you know.
Sure.
And when I used to do that, I used to say, like, why am I not doing this all year?
So after we saw each other at that festival in Bonita Springs, side note, Bonita Springs is where we got married. But
we'll get to that.
Yeah. We both had a show on this side of the coast, and I think we were playing in West Palm, and maybe y'all had a gig at the Biscuit down in Boca. And I told him, I said, well, me and my girlfriend, let's take you to lunch or something. And, you know, we're from the South, so best way to get to know somebody is, you know, let's take them to eat. Well, he's the only one out of the band that wanted to come. So we ended up going to lunch and talking and all that. And I kept thinking, I was like, man, he's really, really brilliant. You know, he has great conversation. Of course, he's handsome. And, you know, it just stayed in my mind, like, how nice, you know, he was. I hadn't really dealt with many Canadians, so I didn't realize, like, it's just part of the thing with Canadians. But he was, you know, he just left an impression, and I guess.
And likewise, you know, it's the same thing. We had a great conversation. She was, you know, she was very articulate, and you know, we just got on well. We chatted about this and that. The more general things that you chat with, because we weren't, it wasn't just the two of us. It was her friend was there as well. And and so we just had general lunch conversation, but it was nice. We're by the waterside and everything. It was excellent. Then I got up, I was planning on paying for the whole thing. And I got up, went to the restroom. When I came back, the bill had been covered. And I was like, what are you doing? This is supposed to be a guy thing, you know, men, you know, men are supposed to take you out and all this, but. She said, it's a Southern thing. We take care of you when you're down here.
Yes, and we asked you to come. So we were like, okay.
Well, that was payment enough for me.
Yeah. And so we didn't see each other again until the next year, 2019. And then January back at the IBCs. And, you know, we had cleared our life and made space for each other. And he scooped me right on up. He was not playing.
So you parted company and you didn't talk hardly at all between the time you parted company in Florida and in IBC?
Much, like on occasion.
On occasion, yeah. He had to clean up his life too. So
okay, all right.
And I cleaned up mine, and we stayed in touch. We knew something was there. We knew that whatever we had in our lives at the time was not for us. I realized, like, after meeting him, nothing in my life made sense unless he was in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Paul, tell me about the proposal, the engagement, and the wedding.
Well, it was the whole thing. We, you know, we saw each other again for March to January. That would be like 10 months or something that we saw each other again. And I sent her a message saying, like, I'm going down to the IBC. Are you coming this year? And she said, well, I don't think so, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
I said I had to go through a breakup, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. And
I said, just come on. It's just a couple of days, you know, it's just a few days. And then we arranged to do a recording session together because she was working on her new record. And our friend Matt Isbell was doing some recording down there. We did some bartering with Matt. Matt said, you guys come and sing on my record. And we'll record your tune at the same time, you know. So that was like, we got to spend time together, and that's where it really blossomed for us. So fast forward to the Blues Music Awards of that year, which are in May. So this is May 29th. We meet in Kansas, I think.
Yeah, we met in Kansas because I had a traffic ticket and I needed someone to drive me to this middle of Kansas. So who else? Why not?
So I rent a car, decide to take a road trip and drive to Memphis, you know, and she wins her first Blues Music Award.
Oh, no, but before that, in March, because we were both recording our album. So March, we had a conversation about, I said, you know, you're the type of guy I wouldn't marry. He said, well, I think you're the type of girl I wouldn't marry too. I said, well, you know.
Yeah, because we are involved at this point.
And so I told him, I said, you know, I've always wanted to get proposed to under the arch.
This was way
in St. Louis, you know.
Way before. She just said that in conversation at some point.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was listening. You know, men don't always hear listen to that.
Mental.
So fast forward, April, we spent all of April finishing up our record. And then the end of April, we met up in Kansas City.
Yeah. So I take a road trip.
Yep.
And to St. Louis. We stayed in St. Louis overnight. And if you want all the details exactly how I proposed to her, I can tell you all that.
The next morning, we had breakfast with a friend. And afterwards, I noticed we were going back to the hotel to get our bags, and he was just rolling up a piece of paper. And I'm just like, what is he doing? And I remember the night before we had explored the hotel, the Hyatt at the Arch, which is immaculate.
A corner suite in there.
Yeah. Oh, and then the view of the Arch. Like,
and then the lobby, there's, you know, there's restaurants, there's jewelry shops, mm-hmm. all kind of different things down there. So we were looking at things, you know, and I was looking at, you know, the jewelry shops. She's, I want to see if they, what they have for earrings or stuff like that, something like that. And, you know, I kind of look and I said, oh, they have rings. And I didn't know, I couldn't guess what size she was. Because if I'd asked her that, she would have known. You know?
I had no clue. So when he's rolling up the receipt the next day, we're walking. He's like, come on, go for a walk with me.
Under the Arch.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay. I was, what are you doing? I said, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And he's still rolling up this paper. And I'm like, what are you rolling up? Oh, just rolling up the receipt. I'm just feeling like, you know, I need to roll it up. I'm like, okay. He's like, come on. And so he pulls me under the Arch and he gets down on one knee, and all these people like looking, and he's saying like the whole speech. And I'm just like, looking. And then my phone rings.
Oh, no.
And she answers it.
It's about my merch. You know, businesswoman always, you know. So I answer, and then I click what's happening, because people still around like, okay, shoot, what's happening? Come on. And so then I look, I said, what'd you say? And he said, will you marry me? And I said, I got to call you back. So needless to say, I said yes. And
so I had taken the receipt from breakfast and rolled it up and formed it into a ring so I could put it on her finger under the Arch.
Got it.
And then... of course she said yes, so I was very happy, but I couldn't, otherwise I'd be giving it away if I'd have gone to get something from the store. So from there, we went into the hotel, into the lobby where there's a jewelry shop. She picked out a ring, and then it was perfect size, and there we were engaged.
So how cool.
And then I won my first Blues
Then
music
we went to
award.
Memphis. Yeah. The next day we drove to Memphis and she won her first Blues Music Award. Mm-hmm. So she was having a good week. I would say
having a good year from the sounds of it.
Very good. Yeah. Very
That's
good.
That's cool. And of course, then you got married in Boca, you said?
No, we got married in Bonita Springs.
Bonita Springs. I'm sorry.
After the Blues Music Awards, I took him home to meet my family for the first time.
Wow.
And tell my Southern Black mama.
Who's this stranger coming to whisk you away.
Yeah. You're gonna go to Montreal. I was just so dramatic. And my granny's like, Sharita, just let her go. You know, she's grown. She know what she wants. And no one's ever come here to ask this. So sure enough.
Yeah. And then the actual wedding happened. We eloped, actually.
Yeah.
And okay.
Best thing we ever did. It was awesome. We planned it in 48 hours. We had come down here to play a benefit for a guitar player who had had a medical issue. It was very serious. And we had a bunch of musicians had gotten together and we were raising funds mm-hmm. by playing at this club on the other side in Naples, Florida. And we're standing outside after the event. You know, everybody's just standing around chatting in the parking lot. And it's 1956 Bel Air, Chevy Bel Air, black and white, beautiful, beautiful car, drives by slowly. I said, that's the car we should get married in. And their windows were open, and they heard us. They heard us say it as they drove by. And they stopped, and the lady in the passenger seat says, are you serious? I said, yeah, why? She says, I'm an officiant. She said, you go
get out of here.
County courthouse tomorrow and get a marriage license, and I'll marry you the next day.
How cool.
We went and I said, are you sure you want to do this? And he's like, yeah. He said, F yeah. I was like, okay. So then I planned my dream wedding in 24 hours, ordered my dress on Amazon, went to JCPenney to get his suit the next day, got our license, and we got married. They picked us up at the hotel. Sign, you know, the paperwork. Yeah. And
we got married at sunset on the beach. And we had our family and friends and
online,
watching through FaceTime.
Wow.
And they watched us get married. We had a couple other friends that were witnesses as well.
And took pictures. And because of the event that happened Sunday for our guitar player, we had photographers.
Yeah.
The photographer ended up shooting our wedding. So we got free photos
and
too.
Minutes after we said, I do, the skies opened up and it just poured raining. Just poured rain. Like, we made it to the car in time. Her in her big dress and everything like that. And we drove back to the hotel.
And
had some wedding cake.
Remember the car didn't have windshield?
Yeah, the car didn't have one of the wipers in it.
It was so old. Yeah, it was a Bel Air. So the wipers.
Wow.
He had to keep, wiping or something.
And we had some wedding cake when we got back to the hotel. Mm-hmm. And then we drove to just a small little pub and had a burger or something like that. Just the two of us after. And it was perfect. It was great. And the thing what was really difficult, we were thinking about how are we going to make this wedding work if, you know, I'm from up north, all my family's up north, you're down south, you know.
Neither one of the elders in our family, they were not getting on a plane.
They're not going to travel and all this, and how are we going to do this, where are we going to meet up, you know. So we couldn't put the puzzle pieces together. Well, finally, we just called them and said, this is what we're doing.
And they said, okay, my mom was a little... She's probably the one that gave us the hardest time because she's like, I'm supposed to be mother of the bride. I said, well, you're going to be mother of the bride digitally. I say, this is what we have to do. I just don't know. I said, well, it's happening, okay? Okay, it's happening.
We signed on the dotted line and it happened. And it was great. Best thing we ever did. Mm-hmm. And mama finally came around.
No dad. Yeah, my mom finally came around, I think. She grew to love him more than she loved me because she always called and like, where's my Paul? I'm like, Ma, do you care about your daughter today? I need to know where my party to make sure you don't have him tied up. You know, I was like, I don't do that anymore. I don't do that. I'm wife now. I don't do that anymore.
Well, Anika and Paul, it's safe to say that you guys have both found what so many people yearn for, and that is true and lasting love. So much so that when I saw you guys on stage in Flint just a couple of months ago, as short a time as I had to see you, the love that you have for each other, the passion that you have for each other was very evident and seemed to flow through your music, honestly. Now, I don't know any other way to explain it than that. And it's kind of cool because I've seen similar things from Thornetta Davis and her husband James and also the Warren Treaty. But it's a very refreshing thing to see a display for two people that love each other like you do. Yeah.
I think we can't help it. We just it kind of oozes out of us. Right. Yeah. And it started,
yeah.
The music came after, you know, the chemistry of the music came after all that.
A lot of people don't know that. They always say, oh, it must be nice. You sit and play music all day. And no, we did not. And we still don't. When we got together in Memphis, we extended our trip after the IBC. So we had a week to just get to know each other. And the first thing we did was we went to the grocery store. And let's, you know, get some stuff. And so we noticed that we were pulling for the same thing from ginger snaps,
Welch's
grape juice. Weird things. What was the other one?
Green apples.
Green apples. I mean, it was just like, really?
Kept reaching for the same things. Like, what? You like this stuff for real?
Who likes ginger snaps, you know? we just kept noticing that week, like, we really have a lot in common. And then, so that explains the love at first sight. It was like,
sure.
I saw myself in you, not in that type of way, but I saw myself. I saw myself that I finally, you know, found that puzzle piece or whatever. And so that extra week, I think, is what kind of solidified it for us. Yeah.
And everything happened, like all of that, because like she said, we had each had our own bands, and we were traveling everywhere internationally and everything. And so we would, you know, we'd be calling each other from the road. So where are you? Well, I'm in Germany. Where are you? I'm over here. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Next week, I got to go here. So we just figured we kind of meet wherever, you know, whenever we were off the road, you know, not because we were out working. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have plans to join forces or anything at all. But what happened was obvious, the pandemic happened. And then we got shut down. This was our first year of marriage. And remember, we got married in August, and then the pandemic hit in March, and then we got locked down together 24/7.
Yeah.
And then we're like, well, what are we going to do? Well, we had nothing to do, you know? So we just started playing music together, mm-hmm. and everybody was doing online streams and things like that.
I remember, yes, sir.
You know? Yep. So just to have some form of income and some form of outlet, you know, artistically. So we started realizing, well, we got a pretty good chemistry here. This is kind of cool.
We didn't even know that. I mean, we had jammed before, but not like enough to know that we had the stage chemistry. I knew we had the offstage chemistry, but realizing during the pandemic, oh, we really got a thing, you know, musically too.
Translating our love and all that connection translated well to the stage and mm-hmm. to our music, you know. And after things started to open up, we were like, well, let's just continue this and see where we get, you know, where this brings us, because the sum of the parts seems to be greater than us individually.
And we really did not. It was like the first time where I did not want to be away from my lover and be on the road. Like it just, and we both said the same thing. Like when things started to open up, I'm like, well, you know, you can go back to your band if you want. You know, I can find a band that's easy. I'm a singer. So you said, no, I like this. I want this.
Yeah. And of course, there's a lot, you know, obviously a lot. Some people didn't even make it through the pandemic, but some couples. Yeah. But we did afterwards. It was of course, I still love you, but I still like you. I still like you is what it was. I want to hang around with you every day, you know. I still want to be with you all the time. So that, hence, you know, then that's what kind of precipitated the musical stuff. And it just went from there. And the chemistry was there on stage, musically, everything. And
indeed.
Throughout our recordings and everything, too, everything just, it clicked. And it's a wonderful thing, it's a precious thing to us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Before I forget, Anika, I want to say thank you for your service, because I know you did serve.
Yeah. Seven and a half years, two tours before they kick women out. I'm glad I served. two tours. I went to Kosovo and I went to Baghdad, Iraq.
Wow.
I got out in 2011 to pursue my degree in my music full time. And I said, whichever one took off, that's what I was going to do. It was either going to be a journalist.
You still kind of are.
Or if the music took off. And the music just, throughout college, the music was just like, you know, hurry up and get done with your degree so we can take off. So that's what I did. And now it's been 15 years. What's 2011?
Yeah, 14.
14 years that I've been doing music pretty much full time. Like, yeah.
So I want to step back just a little bit, and I want to ask you both individually. Paul, I'll start with you. Who were your biggest sources of inspiration when you were getting into music?
Well, I mean, I can't even remember when I started, when my interest in music started. You know,
okay.
I know that there was a piano at home, an old upright that was out of tune and everything. And I would watch my sister and her friends, my older sisters, and play on the piano, you know, and then they would leave and then I would figure out what they were doing, you know, and mess around. And that's kind of, well, that was my first connection. And then I had violin lessons when I was young, classical violins from the age of 6 to 14 or something.
Wow.
So,
okay.
I did a lot of that, and that really developed my ear, because the violin's a really unforgiving instrument, you know. And, you know, as soon as they took the tape off where you're supposed to put your fingers, you know, that was the telling of whether you had an ear or not, you know. And the teacher just took mine off and just like, oh, you're fine. You're fine. So like I mentioned, I had older siblings that would bring records home and things like that I got to hear. I would hear things like the Beatles and all that, even though it was past, you know, the band was already broken up by this point. But I was listening to all this stuff that had acoustic guitar and electric guitar, and that really fascinated me. So about the age of 10, we had an old acoustic guitar that probably had two strings on it that had been a gift from somebody to the family. And I said, I want to learn. So I would like to get some strings put on there so I could learn how to do that. And went to the music store, got them to put a fresh set of strings on, learned a couple of chords from a book and stuff like that, and started going from there. And then I think I was maybe 12 years old, seventh grade, I bought an electric guitar for $35 off someone. Oh, wow. Some Japanese import, you know, that was just horrible. I had a baseball bat for a neck and the action was super high. And I did that till I was 17, till I got my first real, you know, Fender Strat, you know. So, but I learned, I cut my teeth on that guitar. And I started gigging as a bass player when I was about 15, where I was doing, being professionally, you know. So I started very early. I was still in high school when I was playing gigs, you know.
And you realize you can get more girls with the guitar.
Well, yeah, I was a young, thick Coke bottle glasses and acne and the whole deal, terrible haircut.
But you had a man beard. You had a grown man beard.
by the time I was at the end of high school, yeah.
You're like an old man. I'm like.
So, and I studied music after that in university just because I came from a family where my parents were like, you're not just going to go off and be a layabout and do whatever with your musician friends, you know. You got to get an education. So I managed to carve out a few years of education throughout that. And then what ended up happening there is by that point I was doing TV gigs. I was on television, you know, and on these variety shows, these talk shows and stuff like that, being the, you know, the musical guest. And so, you know, it just went from there. It's playing clubs, wow, and festivals and things like that. And that was, God, it's 35 years ago, probably 36 years ago. And it's just gone on ever since. You know, there's been all different types of iterations, mm-hmm, of my career.
And then you got to open for Whitney with Amanda Marshall.
Yeah, all kinds of people. Yeah,
doing your thing. So he always tells me these stories and I'm always like,
You opened for Whitney.
We toured Europe for about 6-10 weeks, I think it was.
Okay.
With a Canadian artist. I was a guitar player with a Canadian artist. His name is Amanda Marshall, and she was very, very big at the time, and we had got the opening slot for Whitney Houston.
And wow.
She was on a full Europe tour in 99 or something like that. And we ended up touring with them for something like 10 weeks in Europe. And it was wonderful, wonderful experience. Amazing. We were playing arenas every night. It was crazy.
No kidding.
You know, so wow. We, you know, experienced that kind of roar of the crowd and all that. You know, it was nice because we were sort of the underdogs as well, or coming up before.
Sure.
They want to hear what they came and paid to hear. So, you know, if we got any kind of positive reaction out of it, it was amazing. It was great.
Well, Anika, I've got to pull you off the couch and get you into this conversation because we haven't heard about your inspirations yet. But let's hear your story.
My story, So my mom had me at 14. I have to tell that part. And my dad was 16. And so my grandparents were the ones that raised me. And so I grew up. Like to say my grandfather was the heathen. He didn't go to church, but he had church on Sundays with his Bible and his whiskey and marijuana. But my granny, on the other hand, she had me in church from a very young age and was all through children's church, the youth choir, the adult choir, all that. And I was pretty much in the church several nights a week. I grew, like, my influences as far as music, and I didn't even know I could sing really until maybe around 12, 13. And then around 15, they gave me my first solo and I sucked so bad. Like, I was awful. I still remember, like,
you're probably just nervous.
I was very, very nervous, but I still remember they didn't give me another solo after that. So years later, my church, home church sees me and they're like, oh, you really could sing.
Yeah, okay,
but my
look who's made a career out of it.
Yeah, my initial influences were definitely the women of the church, the older women that I'm obsessed with the old gospel sound. That's like, you can hear it when I'm singing. You can
yes, ma'am.
That's my foundation. The old ladies in the church. And then gospel artists like Mahalia Jackson, Mavis Staples, Yolanda Adams, Shirley Caesar, like those are my, just my foundation for where, like, if I wanted to sing or emulate somebody, it would be them. Favorite probably Mavis, for sure. Mavis, because I love that she honors the foundation, but she still is able to spread the message to everybody and they get it. As I got older, when I went out to the Army, that's when I realized, like, I definitely had a knack for performing that I could actually...
Because guess who they used to ask to sing the national anthem all the time?
Me. I don't know how... I lost count how many times I've sang the anthem. So I'm very particular when I hear people sing it. Just because in the military, I tell him the story the first time that we sang it for the colonel and the general, me and this girl, we just did run for run for run. And the military, they want you to get in and out. It's like a minute and 30. That's it. We probably went for like 3.5 minutes and they kind of looked
wow.
And they were like, well, specialist chambers at the time, maybe you all should come back when you have it right, you know? So from then on, I was like, okay, get in and out. You can do your embellishments and stuff, but get in and out.
Sing the melody.
Sing the melody, yeah. For sure. And then when we were in Kosovo, I had my first band there. And we would do like top 40 stuff, you know, Knocking on Heaven's Door, all that kind of stuff. So sure. I learned these songs that I grew up with just gospel music. So I didn't get to hear like a lot of secular music. So I was really into it, you know, and we got to go around and sing to the different villages in Kosovo. And I thought I was like, okay, yeah, this is what I love to do, you know, so.
Well, I have to be honest. I love that you guys came out of the gate catching attention separately at the time. Anika, your debut album, Making My Mark, earned you Blues Foundation nomination for Best New Artist in 2014.
Yeah.
You followed that up with 3 BMAs for Soul Blues Female Artist in 2019, 22, and 24. And then, Paul, you've got 6 Maple Blues Awards plus runner-up at the IBC in 2016. Some would say, and perhaps rightfully so, that you both are living blessed lives. Would you agree?
Well, we're both doing what we love. You know, and we were doing what we loved before, you know, and it was going relatively well, you know, before we met. So the fact add this combination to it, it's like just it's heavy.
Yeah, it's like and we find it too, I mean, we found both of our shows separately were great. But this is something supernatural, you know, and only way that you could do it like this is if you're with the person, you know,
yeah, like that connection.
Yeah, it's totally, and it's not even something that I think I ever envisioned either for my career until we Same. Were locked down in COVID, you know. I was like, oh, people are liking this like duo thing we got. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then but we're like, okay, well, let's try it out. See, and if it works, let's do it.
Give it a shot. Give it a good shot, you know.
Well, and I wouldn't normally do this, but I want people to see the chemistry that the two of you have. And I captured some of that chemistry when you did your performance in Flint. So I'm going to put a link up to my photo album.
Yeah.
That'll be part of the notes section for this episode. But Paul, I want to turn the page here for a minute. I believe it was 2018. Your life was altered immeasurably when you suffered a traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. Now, before we talk about that day leading up to the accident, I have to ask you, I'm assuming this is obviously after you had met Anika the first time, yeah?
Yeah, it is.
We joke and say that he had to fall and hit his head, bump his head.
To realize that I was
his last text before he hit his head. I was in Bangor, Maine. He was in Edmonton, right? I remember I sent him a picture and he's like, oh, nice elbow. And then I didn't hear from him for like 2 weeks. So go ahead.
Yeah, I had been on tour with my band. We're touring Western Canada. And I just remember before that, it was, you know, there were these huge forest fires. We hadn't seen the sun, but a weird orange disc in the sky amongst the smoke, you know, for a couple of weeks that we were on tour there. We were playing the Edmonton Folk Festival, the Edmonton Blues Festival. And so we arrived the night before to perform there, and they had the after party for the bands and all that. They had a jam and everything at the hotel. And I remember pretty much the end of the night. And then I don't remember, I have no recollection of the actual event, but it looks like I fell. I must've fallen backward and I split my head open.
Wow.
And I hit it probably quite hard. And I just woke up. I remember coming to, sitting in the emergency at the hospital with my head bandaged up and going, what's going on? This is not, you know, and I touched my head and I was like, this is not good. This, you know, and I went to the nurse, like, what's happening? I said, you know, I have a show tomorrow, you know. No, she says, you got to sit and wait and get stitched up, you know. So they put a dozen staples in my head. And then this was like, by this time it was noon the next day and we were on in the afternoon. So I went home, went to my hotel room, washed the blood out of my hair and got changed and went to the gig and did the gig. And it was, this is the closest to death I ever felt like in my life. I had no idea if I was going to make it through or not. It was just silly, stupid.
Married then.
And then after that show, we had another gig in Nanaimo, BC. So we flew out that night. And then the next day I played the gig in Nanaimo and the stage started swaying back and forth like this while we were playing. And I said, oh, well, I'll sleep it off. And hopefully tomorrow, you know, we have to fly home, so I'll feel better. And I felt worse when we woke up the next morning. So flew back to Montreal and I went straight to emergency. They diagnosed me with a traumatic brain injury. And I just basically slept in the dark for about 3 weeks. And then flew to Europe to tour Europe, which was, it was crazy.
I'm blown away by that.
Well, it wasn't the smartest thing to do. And I'm sure I compromised my recovery by doing all those things. You know, I should have, most people, my doctor at the time, she said like most of my patients are on full rest for 4 months after they experience what you had, you know. Not working, they're at home, they're taking it easy and getting treatment. So I've been left with lingering after effects of that, like the permanent, but I have issues. I have issues with my balance. I have issues with my eyes. I wear these glasses because I see double and a little bit. So these are prism glasses and it's got a certain tint to them because I suffer from constant migraines from that. So I'm medicated for that. And, a lot of different things, but I have best nurse in the world right here, you know, and she knows, she understands, and she sees it in my eyes before I realize it, that, you know, okay, you've hit your wall. Mm-hmm. You can't, cognitively, you're done. It's you're out of energy. So we kind of manage each other, especially when we're on the road, you know, and that's the beauty, the added beauty of this whole experience together is that we can take care of each other.
Like he knows, like, that I'm going to have his back or that I'm, you know, I'm going to look out for him, you know, and vice versa, because I deal with, I don't know if you read about this, but I deal with complex PTSD from the war. So I tell him, like, him hitting his head, it doesn't bother me, you know, because I know... I know trauma. And so we just focus on, we don't even focus on the traumas. It's just if I see something, I'll say, okay. Specifically, it shows it's like, okay, no strokes, no this, no that. And just kind of matter of fact with people, like if I see him getting overwhelmed or someone just talking his ear off, I'll say, you know what? He has a brain injury. So I just have to move him, you know, because we always want him, the band, we always say we want him to be good for the show.
Well, sure.
Long as he's good for the show.
So we manage everything around that happens around that. Then, you know, we've kind of fashioned our whole.
Even our tour life, we've adjusted. And personally, I like it that we get to do it on our terms as far as. Like, we don't want to be in, we cannot be in a van for hours and touring like a lot of, you know, like other artists. Like, we, because, you know, the, it will just bring on vertigo and all of that. And we already know these things. So we'll say, okay, we'll fly in to such and such place and then we'll drive for 3 hours. We'll drive for, you know, max 4 hours.
Right.
But, we're not doing 12-hour drives. We're just not doing it.
Playing a gig.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, how has your survival from that event tempered how you live your life today?
Well,
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a lot of things changed. I realized a lot, you know, the people in my life that I was useful for to them, you know, that I was a commodity to them. I saw that happen where they kind of fell by the wayside, you know, when I wasn't so well as I used to be, when I wasn't the person before I had the accident. And obviously I quit drinking because head injuries and alcohol just, I woke up with the worst hangover in my life for what felt like 6 weeks, 3 months, you know, that's what it feels like when you have a concussion like that. And so that changed a lot in my life. And of course, Anika was my, really saved me, because I had a very difficult time. For anyone who's experienced it, they know. But if you've never experienced a brain injury, it's, you know, I would wake up in the morning and go like, I can't figure out if I need to make myself coffee or have a shower or do I have to answer emails? And I couldn't sort that out in my mind. You know, and it seems crazy, but it's awful when you can't sort that out. You can't. And I remember when we first got married, Anika came up to Montreal, and my son was living with me then too, who was what it was 15 or something.
Just turned 16.
Yeah, and bless his soul, he took care of his dad while I wasn't well. And she showed up, and the first thing she did was cook us dinner. You know, she was like, right away, I'm in the kitchen. She's there making dinner for the boys.
Total,
you know,
Southern girl. You know, like, it's just, but it wasn't a fact of like I have to do this or whatever. It comes natural to me because that's the type of women I grew up with. You know, they worked and they cooked and, you know, all that. But I also knew, I mean, I'd hear them sometimes say, you know, I just can't figure it out, you know, and I'm just like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, and I was on my own. I'd go, we'd have rehearsals or things like that, and I'd come home just wiped, completely wiped. I have to lay down straight away, you know, and I'd be convulsing from you know, what's going on in my brain. You know, so.
And that was the part, I think, where we got together at the right time. And got married at the right time, all of those things, just to understand, like, work is secondary. Your health is first. Mm-hmm. And anyone that's around you, especially in your work, that don't understand that right now, it's not about money, it's not about... And of course, if he would have missed that tour, the band would have lost a lot of money, which I think his mind was, you know, he was thinking about everyone else and not himself, which is what musicians, what band leaders tend to do all the time. But the blessing in it is throughout the pandemic, we were really able to like hone in on that as a boundary is that, you know what, health is first. Health is first. And
Yes,
then
ma'am.
We'll put, I put health and family together, and then work is behind that. Because a
Perfect.
lot of, I mean, at the end of the day, something happened.
Without health, there is no wealth.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. So,
well, I'm going to turn the page again. Since we last saw each other, you guys have been busy, like we talked about earlier. You had a few more dates in the United States, and then it was off to Europe. I'd love to hear a little bit about that tour leg, because it sounds like it was phenomenal all the way around.
We call that tour planes, trains, and automobiles, because we're
skipping from country to country.
We were on planes, we were on trains, we were on, and we had to rent a van and drive to our gig in the Netherlands. I thought every show was beautiful. It was different. Each place was different. The hospitality, Europe, the audiences, they really love this music, and they come out,
and
they're
very demonstrative about their appreciation for the music too. And it's a whole different vibe. You get there and you're like, well, I guess they must appreciate that you made the long trek over the ocean to get there. But it's really a wonderful experience. It always has been for me, going to Europe and playing.
Yeah.
And it was a whirlwind trip for sure. I mean, we hit Finland, Germany, Belgium,
and
the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got to see one of my dearest friends. We were in the army together. She was one of my first roommates, and we're very, very close. And she lives in Germany now, works for the Department of Defense, whatever they're
okay.
called. But she and her boyfriend and her friend came to the show in Belgium to see me perform. And oh my God, it just did my heart so good, because, you know, I've known her since I was 19. And
sure.
So that was my noise for several years. So for her to see me and just for us to just spend time, she even brought me some birthday gifts. Prank birthday gifts is her thing. Mm-hmm. So it was just really awesome. It was really cool.
And the other cool thing about it is our distributor there had shipped, before we got to Finland, mm-hmm. had shipped our LPs, our vinyl LPs to us. First time they were sitting at the doorstep here in Florida already, but that happened while we were away.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the first instance where we actually got to see our music on vinyl for the first time. That was great. You know, it was very exciting.
Very cool.
You know,
yeah.
Tangible.
And I was going to mention that during this same period of time, you also released your new album, Our Time to Ride, an album produced by Eric Korn, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Below, out of L.A., yeah.
And that was great. We both knew Eric beforehand, mm-hmm. or when we were individual artists and stuff like that. We were always talking about when we're going to work together, when we're going to do something. You know, we got to make a record. So it finally happened. And this being our second record, we reached out to Eric and said, you know, asked him if he'd be interested in doing it. Of course, he jumped on board. And he's been doing a wonderful job with 40 Below Records and stuff. And we had such a good time recording the album with him. It's the first time in my career, because we always would produce our own records, mm-hmm. you know, and release them.
And I always have producers, just because I thought that was the standard.
So it was this or that. And it was the first time for me that I could let go of the reins, mm-hmm. you know, and not have to worry about that part of the recording and stuff. We just sit and play, you know, with the band, and a lot of magic happened. I mean, what you're hearing on the record is usually first, second take, you know, third take, maybe, you know, it just kind of flowed naturally. It really was. It was a special experience.
And making it with the band, the guys that we tour with, it was just like, it just made it even more special, because they just put their all into it as well. And so really,
and they knew what the music was all about. Mm-hmm. They knew what we were all about, you know, so they naturally just fit in right away.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric was the fifth Beatle, you know, mm-hmm. he was there behind the glass and kind of, you know, giving us good counsel, you know, for this
and
or
helping
that.
Us build this sound that you know, mixing. We like to say Mavis meets the Rolling Stones, you know. And
going for that sort of, you know, what is our sound going to be? How can we augment what we already have, you know, and create something new?
Well, you call this album A Love Story, A Healing Force, and A Ride Worth Taking. And your signature song from this album, Love You Just the Same, is a song you guys call a blues rock love letter celebrating unwavering commitment through every high and low. That is some signature song.
Well, it's a lot to live up to.
It is, yeah. It's crazy because when we wrote that tune, I mean, a lot of the tunes just came from us sitting here. And I would have some idea, and I'm like, maybe help me put some chords to this. And then we just, okay, we'll leave that. And so we just share with Eric, like, all the ideas we had. And this was one of them that he loved.
And it ended up being the first song we recorded on the record, and it opens up the album as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah, and it was the first single we released as well, so... Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of the story behind it is, you know, no matter what life throws at you, and life will throw things at you, you know, the good and the bad. It's I love you just the same. I'll be with you through thick and thin, you know. And
I made you guys a promise too. Do you notice what's back here on the wall? Yeah, I told you when you signed it, that's where it was going to end up. And I got to tell you, I listened to that album on the way home, and it truly is it's a piece of work. It's incredible. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot, it was recorded live off the floor, you know, so there's a lot of love that went into it, obviously. I listened to it the other day on the plane on the way back from somewhere. I forget where we're coming, but they didn't have any Wi-Fi. So I always had my earbuds in. And I listened to the whole thing, and I went, man, we made a great record, you know, because it's so far in the past for us. And, you know, we're in the promotion stage and all of that.
Sure.
And because, you know, I listened to the actual music and the sound, and I A-B'd with other records and things like that. And I was like, man, this is a great record.
It we're really, really is. Proud of what we did. The lyrics, just the messages, you know, but we have a story for like every song. I would
just the whole vibe is a whole. Yeah.
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 And this one here, I have to brag on him because in the studio, he was just knocking out these solos. And you mentioned the brain injury, and we were very cognizant of that in the studio. And Eric would say, you know, should we keep him going or should we stop, you know, because the brain injury? And I said, no. He's on a roll. Let him go. And he would keep saying, are you sure? Are you sure? And then I would ask him, I said, you want to keep going? And he'd be like, yeah, I'm good. And I would just knock out the solo, like the solo on Temperature 109. I think you did that in one take.
I think that's the last one we did.
Right? It was like in one take. Like
I knocked them all out in one night.
Yeah.
You know, some stuff I did live while we were recording and the stuff I didn't do because I'm playing rhythm underneath. And so I recorded all the solos that I had to do. I did it all in one evening, you know, and things were just flowing. It was going, it was like, okay, you want to stop? Nope. Just keep it going. Keep it coming. You know?
Well, it looks like you guys have some dates on the calendar for this year yet. How are things looking for 2026 for Chambers de Laurier?
Well, the record is getting a lot of attention. So,
yeah.
You know, things are still developing on the touring front. They always do, but it's really the kind of.
We already have some Europe stuff going on for the summer, and
I'm gonna stop you.
Let
me stop you guys real quick because you had a glitch in your connection. So can I ask that question again, and I'll just edit that out? Okay. So it looks like you guys have a few dates left on the calendar for this year yet, but what is it looking like for 2026 for Chambers de Laurier?
Well, there's definitely a lot more going to be added
as
we go. And we're right in the booking period right now for all the summer festivals and things like that. So
yeah, we've had some Europe stuff come up for the summer. And
nice.
You know, just the busier, the better, but the smarter, busier, the better.
Yeah.
So that's why when we have the Europe stuff, it, you know, the trek is crazy, but they really, in all aspects, you know, we love to.
Yeah, we just released some live videos from last summer, from this summer.
Yeah, at the Jazz Fest.
Montreal Jazz Fest. Yeah. So yeah. Just on our YouTube channel, so people can get an idea of what we're like live, you know.
And I have to tell you, it's worth watching, folks. You got to check it out. Seriously. It's that good.
Who filmed it did a great job of editing as well. And the crew out of Montreal that I've worked with a lot from a lot of my releases doing little promo videos and things. It's cool. It's cool. And we're excited. You know, this is like, finally we feel like, okay, this is, we have arrived. This
yeah,
is our
and this is our sound. This is what you, and we love hearing people say, as far as from like couples that work together, that they haven't heard this, you know? So when we look at, like, we look at the Warren Treaty, and we're like, you know what? We both have the similar story, you know, one's with the military, ex-military war vet, you know, and you just navigate life. And we just so happen to put it down on music as well, you know, to music as well. So
if you haven't seen, and I'm going to look and see if I can find a copy on YouTube or something. If you haven't seen Thornetta and James, you got to see them. I mean, she gets to dance with him.
She's one of our dear friends.
Okay. All right. So you've seen the performance.
We love them. We love James so much. They bring
tears to our eyes every time we see him on stage. When
this kind of stuff. I'm sorry. I guess I'm an old sap. All right, I'm a sap. I admit it. I really enjoy seeing that kind of love and personal connection on stage, and it's so wonderful. Like you said, when you're up there as performers, and you've got that connection, and it's so real. You can't make that stuff up.
Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of either, you know.
Absolutely.
To be proud of.
And it's and especially in a lot in our culture today, as a culture of, like, you know, social media and everything, to meet us and realize that who you see online is exactly who we are in person. It's very important for us. It's important for us that is who we are. And that
in 3D.
Yes. it's just, you know, we don't want to be fake. And we also want you to be inspired, you know, because some people are like, oh, I'll just be single the rest of my life. No, he got married at almost 50.
Yeah.
So there's
for the first time.
So there is somebody, I strongly believe that there's somebody out there for you that will cherish your heart and cherish who you are. And even though we have our what would we call the brain injury and the complex
our challenges,
we have someone who helps us navigate them.
It comes on. It can come at the strangest time where you never expected it. I never expected at 49 that I would even. Well, I was 48 at the time that I stared. You know, looked across a crowded room and our eyes locked, and it was like, whoa, what was that? You know. And at 49, we're married. You know,
it's like I genuinely hope that I get to see you guys in Michigan again, and would love to have you get an opportunity to meet my husband, because I've got a very similar situation going on there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I loved your story. I'm always just like, you know, at the end of the day, our motto is always love wins. Love wins.
Yes.
Always, because. Especially when you lead with love, when you lead with it. There were no games or nothing. We just laid it all out here, you know?
Yep.
And it's been beautiful.
Yeah.
So indeed. Well, Anika and Paul, where can we send folks to learn more about you? Maybe buy some merch and some CDs or vinyl, or book you for a gig?
They can go to anikaandpaul.com. So that would be A-N-N-I-K-A. ANDPAUL.com. So like Anika and the full words. Everything's there. You can buy the record there. You can buy the CD there. You can download
T-shirts there. You can buy the vinyl there. Yeah.
And there's a link that will take you to through 40 Below as well. We have links that will take you to 40 Below Records. We have links that will take you to Spotify, Apple Music, you know, anywhere you consume music. If you're a streamer, it's all there.
And to the book,
the booking as well.
Wants to book us, that information is there too. And we love all gigs. We love house concerts. We love big festivals. We love small festivals. We love little clubs.
Get in touch with Intrepid Artists International.
I think you have the ARC by you? Is it the ARC?
Yes, we do. In Ann Arbor, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we spent time in Ann Arbor. He went to the headache clinic there in Chelsea.
Yeah.
So I stayed in Ann Arbor and went back and forth to the hospital every day.
We just got some big news that broke within the last 24 hours. The State Theater in Kalamazoo has reopened. They're in the process of reopening. It just sold and they signed the paperwork yesterday.
Okay.
So I've reached out to them to ask them to come on, the new owners, to do an interview, and the PR firm is going to bring them on for me. And I've got a short list of performers that I'm going to give them. And Chambers de Laurier is at the top of my list. I just want you to know that.
We love
Thank you, Jim.
We love it up there.
I would love to have you guys come to Kalamazoo. That would be so much fun. And listen, if you've never played the State Theater, it is such an ornate, beautiful venue. It's almost 100 years old, but it's an old theater. And I think you guys would have a blast. I really do.
Yeah,
I love it.
I've been to Kalamazoo twice already to perform.
I've only been once.
And the thing I love about Kalamazoo is all the history, because Gibson guitars started in Kalamazoo.
Oh, yeah.
So some of the guitars that I have, that I own, were made right there in Kalamazoo.
Well, Anika Chambers and Paul de Laurier, I do appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for stopping by, sharing your stories, and being part of this episode of Time Signatures. I want to wish both of you much continued success and safe travels and many, many more years of wedded bliss and happiness.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you so much.
So great to see you again.
And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Anika Chambers and Paul de Laurier, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down.
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.